Hey there, sweet peas. Welcome back to Friendless. I'm your host, James Avramenko, and it is the end of the month, so it is time for another Little Guy episode. It's February, the month of love, or at least, like, there's one day in the month that celebrates love. I don't know. Is February designated the love month? I don't know. In any case, I thought I would share some thoughts I've been unpacking over the last couple months. And then I also have a whole brand new thwack of listener questions all centered around the theme of l'amour. All right. Since you've already been at a reasonable level, get comfy. Let's dive right into it. So look, 2024 got off to a little bit of a rocky start, but I think things are kind of settling down now, and I'm feeling a lot better. February has been just exponentially better than January. Maybe it's the sun coming back incrementally. Maybe it's all the therapy I've been doing. Who knows? It could be any number of things. But in any case, things are trucking along. The TikTok account has randomly blown up. It still never fails to just baffle me that I can put up little 15-second random thoughts and people around the world connect to it and laugh and share and comment. And the internet is so fucking weird. Like, just this is so fucking weird. Is it not? I don't know. That's a whole different thought process. We are not here to talk about me. We are here to talk about love. Now, forewarning, I'm not going to be like talking about like classical definitions or something like that. More what I'm looking to unpack is sort of where I'm at in my relationship with love and what the word has come to mean to me these days. And that encapsulates not only, you know, intimate love with other people, but also self-love. And so those are kind of the ideas that I'm unpacking here. It's not just like a overview of the history of love so much as like, where am I at and what are some of the ideas I'm sort of chewing on these days? One thing that I've really come to realize over the last couple months, especially through therapy, talking, you know, to my therapist, Scott, and just, you know, what I continue to unpack is I think we collectively, at least I, had it completely wrong. I think when I would hear the word love, I would immediately think of someone else. I would immediately think of connection outside of myself. And I would go looking for whatever, you know, my body, my nervous system defined as love outside of me. And what I've realized is that love starts with yourself. Every single relationship you get into, you show up as you are in that moment. And that relationship, whatever it might be, gets constructed around that version of yourself. You know, there's room to grow together. There's excitement about potential futures. But wherever you are when you form that connection, that is the baseline for whatever that relationship is going to become. And if you don't have a genuine, clear, authentic image of who you are and an understanding of who you are, then that relationship will inevitably be built kind of on silt, right? Like it's not going to have as strong a foundation as you maybe trick yourself into thinking you do. I've been doing a lot of reading about codependency and just how that affects the way that we show up within relationships. And I personally have tended to have the instinct to, you know, want to take accountability for myself, to want to recognize how I've shown up, and at the same time to portray this sort of like victimhood, right? And to portray this like these things were done to me and I was, oh, woe is me, and it was all the big bad other person's fault, right? And that is just fundamental bullshit. I think that if we default to blaming everything that went wrong in a relationship only on the ex, then that's sort of a shortcut just to repeat that cycle. And so when I talk about things like love, I realize that I'm still very much developing what my interior definition of that even is, because I don't know if I've ever genuinely experienced it. I've gone through a cycle of toxic and abusive relationships of varying lengths, but none have ever truly left me feeling like I understood what authentic love really was. And I realize now that it's because I didn't ever start with myself. I always started with, how is the other person going to validate me? How am I going to validate them? How am I going to get what I need from them? Because I didn't get what I needed, you know, growing up. And so it's not based in authenticity, and it's not based in a genuine connection. It's based on a sort of, you know, like almost a subtle manipulation. So I think when it comes down to the question of love, what you really want to start with is focusing on yourself, to stop overanalyzing what someone else did and put that focus on yourself. You know, when you're looking at why a relationship didn't work, you know, asking yourselves, you know, why did you need that attention? Why did you feel safe in the chaos that that relationship created? And why, even when your nervous system was screaming for you to get out, did you stay? Why did you tell yourself that you had to stay to help this other person? There's so many interlocking elements of our culture and our societal conditioning that comes into play here, because, you know, having the capacity to understand someone, having the capacity to empathize with them is one thing, and that's a beautiful thing. That doesn't mean you have to stay in what does amount to abusive situations. The only person that you really can help in those scenarios is yourself. You're never going to be able to help somebody who doesn't want to help themselves first. And that's where that codependency comes into play. There's an instinct within that, you know, what's it called? That sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Modality? I don't know if that's the proper one. But there's an instinct within codependency to fix people who don't want fixing. And that creates these really unsafe bonds where you basically stop being a partner and you start being a parent to someone else. But what ends up actually happening is you're getting in the way of them living their life, and you're getting in the way of them fixing their own problems. I don't date children. Let's just put it really clearly there, right? So you're actually getting in the way of them being an adult, and then that gets flipped. And in you know, in my mind, I think to myself, well, I'm just being clear. I'm being honest. I'm being, you know, I'm frustrated because I see and I know what's better for you. But really, that's just another level of manipulation. And it's especially manipulation when it's being framed like an expectation, right? And especially because that ends up coming out in these moments of deep frustration and volatility, which are never going to be helpful for anyone. If someone is in general genuine distress, if somebody is struggling with something that they can't get through, and you keep bagging on them and you keep on putting them in, you know, down under this guise of tough love, you're only going to divide more. You're only going to separate more. And so, you know, I heard this thing recently that was like, say it with love or don't say it. And I really value that. I think there's a Ram Dass saying of, do you want to be right or do you want to be righteous? And that's a saying I'm constantly coming back to and thinking about. And I think those two play together in the sense that if you can't say it softly, there's no real reason for you to say it, because it presupposes that that other person doesn't know this already, which they absolutely do. Whether or not they do something about it isn't your problem, because, you know, you choose to stay in the situations that you are in. And obviously, you know, there's so much gray here and there's so much context here. And, you know, it's difficult because, you know, you get into scenarios of abuse, you get into scenarios of real deep trauma bonding, and everything becomes so much murkier. And I don't believe in black and white thinking. I don't believe in all or nothing, good, bad. I recognize that, in taking on a level of responsibility, it empowers me to make different decisions later on in my next opportunity to make those kinds of decisions. That doesn't exonerate the other person. That doesn't mean I'm taking everything on. That other person still definitely holds a responsibility to how they acted, how they behaved, how they treated you. But, you know, I think it's really important, especially in coming out of a relationship, I think it's really important to take responsibility for your part so that you can address what happened and not repeat it again. Because you got to remember, you know, just because you don't have a personality disorder doesn't mean that you are emotionally safe. Which, like, for the record, before I go any further, like, you don't have to be. You don't have to be anything. You don't have to do anything. You don't have to change anything. It's just recognizing that the internal narrative you've created for yourself doesn't always jive with what you actually do in this world and how you show up in this world. I teach my students all the time when we're talking about like user personas and stuff like that, like more often than not, the vast majority of people will say one thing and do something very different. And you're not an exception to that. I'm not an exception to that. But you don't have to change for anyone. You don't have to change if you don't want to. This all comes with the sort of, you know, the baseline of is something not working for you? Do you want to adjust going forward? And so what you really need to be doing is asking yourself, you know, what is it that you're bringing to the relationship? What is it that you are avoiding about yourself? You know, everyone brings their own baggage, you know, everywhere they go, right? And we, I think sometimes we lose sight of that because we get so used to that weight. And so we just think that that's just a part of being alive, is just carrying this subconscious instinctual weight with us everywhere we go. But the more you sort of turn around and look at it and look at where you're coming from and what you're bringing along with you, the easier it gets to let that stuff go and leave it behind you. It comes to this question of unconditional love, you know? What does unconditional love mean? Because the more I look at my childhood and the more I hear about other people's childhood, I realize that we were raised with conditions. So I don't know if we truly understand the term unconditional, you know? If you eat your broccoli, you can watch TV. If you get good grades, you can go out with your friends on the weekend. We'll watch this movie if you go for that, right? So like, it was always transactional. It was always conditional. That's not unconditional love. Unconditional love is, it does not matter what you do in this world, in this life. You will never be abandoned. You will never be invalidated. You will never be unhurt. You will always hold a place no matter what it is you do. That is unconditional. And that's fucking hard, right? I can't remember if it's Ram Dass or if it's Alan Watts who says, there's only two things you have to do in this world, and that's tell the truth and love everyone. And, you know, then he laughs because it's like, that's the easiest thing to say, but the hardest thing to do. That's literally going to be your life's work. And you start by first giving yourself that unconditional love. Nothing you have done has ever, will ever make you unworthy of unconditional love. You can never be abandoned because you will always have yourself. And that's not, you know, an inflated ego thing. That when you're leaning into the love, not the, what is it? What's the sort of connection of ego? Is sort of like, there's a fear there around ego of like, I'll get blinded by it. I'll get egotistical. I'll get, you know, toxic about it. But when you're coming from an authentic love of just a softness and a curiosity and an intention of support, that's not ego. That's not scary. That's something deeper and genuine. And I know for me, I get really afraid of that because I haven't thought I've deserved it. And I've realized through so much deep therapy work that there's nothing I have ever done, there's nothing I will ever do that is ever going to make me unworthy of love. And that's the exact same thing for you. Because shame plays such a deep part in this. Why didn't I see the red flags? Why didn't I make this choice? Why didn't I change this? Why did I do that, right? And the blame is going to paralyze you. So really, it comes down to you have to forgive yourself and you have to stop placing blame on yourself for past choices. Choices that you only made based on the information you had, which is all we can ever do. So, you know, we stop blaming ourselves. We stop blaming others. We just recognize these are the choices we made. This is what happened. This is what I'd like to do differently next time. Sometimes it'll be in connection with that person. Sometimes it won't. It's going to depend on what happened. But I also think even in a separation, even in a disconnection, there's a love there because there's an understanding that even though people can change and people do change right now, that ain't happening. You know, change happens incrementally. It happens slowly. It's like evolution, right? You don't just, you know, one day you're a pink wolf and the next day you're like, wow, it snowed, so I'm a white wolf now. No, like it takes fucking years and years and years of conditioning and integration and practice. So it's all easy to talk about, but it's really getting into it and reminding yourself every day there's nothing you can do that is going to make you undeserving of unconditional love for yourself. It doesn't matter what other people think. It doesn't matter what stories they tell. It doesn't matter what they get right. It doesn't matter what they get wrong. It doesn't matter if they love you or not. What matters is, do you love yourself? Because the deeper and the truer you love yourself, the more open you're going to be to the love that you need from other people and from the world around you. Because you're going to end up kind of needing that love less. And that kind of circles me back into a thing, this idea of like, why didn't I see the red flags? I saw this thing recently from Dr. Romney, though, and I really agree with it, that red flags are kind of a misnomer, right? Because, you know, just because you made a certain choice doesn't make it a mistake. You know, you saw behavior that you excused. You made a choice in that moment, and now you're living with the consequences of it. I don't consider those mistakes, especially because, like, you're not dead, you know? So there's still time. I think that we're constantly being bombarded with these ideas of, you know, productivity, rush, 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 get there, get to the next thing. Oh, you're getting older, you're rotting, you're decaying, you're this, that, right, you know? But, like, there is time. You're going to have all the time you need because it's going to be all the time you get, right? So there's no need to rush into the next thing, to just pretend like you're healed and you've got it all figured out and onto the next connection. Like, why? Why wouldn't you just take the time to stop and look at yourself and truly understand yourself and really embody what you've learned before moving on? You know, that's the only, to me, that's the only, I guess you could call it, failure from these, you know, quote unquote red flags, is if you recognize them now that you have new information, but you didn't do anything about it. That's the only failure to me. And even then, like, that's a soft one, because it's like, yeah, sometimes people need to take a class. Look, I had to take multiple classes. I had to take classes multiple times in university, you know, like it's not always going to stick the first time. Right. So even that, just be gentle with yourself. It's fine. It takes the time that it takes. Right. But it's just always centering it with just compassion, self-love, softness, and just going slow, slow the fuck down. Because I think that the faster we push ourselves through this sort of like growth period, the more we lean on hate and blame. And, you know, anger isn't bad. There is a use for it. You know, like every emotion has a use. You know, if you are thinking of a moment that generates anger in you, it's really important. I mean, let's just take a second to recognize if that suddenly flashes something, you know, you're safe right now. You were in an unsafe situation, but you're not anymore. And, you know, barring certain scenarios, I think it's a much more powerful reframing to recognize that you participated in what was done. And that isn't happening anymore. You are an adult. You have autonomy. And it's okay to, you know, see the pain that other people are in, to empathize with them. But that doesn't mean you have to stay connected. That just means that you understand, right? You know, for me, like, I stayed longer than I should have in many relationships. And that's okay. I learned. Even if this was a painful lesson, it was still a lesson. But anger and resentment, these are emotions that you can't compartmentalize them. They're really important to feel and get through, but you can't put them aside until, you know, and they say, I'll come back to that, because it spills into every other facet of your life. And so, you know, it's okay to feel it, but what isn't helpful is to hold on to it. And what I'm finding to get through that, first and foremost, is, again, coming back to this, you know, forgive yourself. First and foremost, always, 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 just forgive yourself. It's okay. It's okay. You made a choice. The choice happened. The consequences happened. And you're here now. And you are safe. And you don't have to make that choice again. Something Scott's always reminded me of is, you know, these people who have been in my life, I'm not connected to them anymore. there's no reason for me to fear them. They're just people, you know? They're just some fucking person out there in the world. We're not connected anymore. I'm safe from them. They're safe from me. If that's what they feel, you know, if they feel fear of me, there's no connection. There's no danger, right? And it's okay to feel that stuff, but just let yourself off the hook. You know, if you're feeling it, don't blame yourself for feeling it, right? You know, just forgive, 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 forgive. I made all these like frantic notes about all these things that I've been thinking. And so I really hope this isn't coming across like way super ADHD fractured. I hope that, you know, the narrative that made sense in my brain is coming across. I don't know. I'm keeping it the way it is. But like, I had a momentary like, I wonder if this is a little too fragmented, but we're just going to keep on plowing through. You know, when my last relationship broke down last year and then all the loops that we went through all the way into, you know, the beginning of this year, what I would always do is I would fall into this realm of like, I would learn about the condition that they had. And I would deep dive and learn about, you know, what can I do to help them? Right. And I would always be pushing to help them. And I was never giving myself that help. And I would always think to myself in moments of no contact, I'd be like, well, I've changed. I've learned all this. I understand this. And the thing that I've realized is that, no, I haven't. I just caught my breath because I was in a toxic cycle. And I was finally given the chance to recoup my energy and recoup my thoughts and get myself settled because my nervous system was fried. I was constantly on edge. I was constantly nervous and anxious and compensating. You know, I was so hypervigilant. And people don't change like that. Scott always says, you know, when I get settled, I have this instinct to challenge my confidence, to sort of like see, you know, like if I can test myself. And I really want to encourage you not to do that, because change doesn't come along through, you know, a roller coaster. It comes through consistency and commitment and integration and doing that personal work on yourself for yourself to get yourself together. And it's not, you know, all change so I can be here for you. It's all change because I need to change. And it's not, I'm going to help you change, because you can't change anyone but yourself, especially if they don't want to change. So all you really can do is just get to know yourself, learn everything you can about yourself, and just get good with that. Because if you don't know yourself, you can't meet anyone else. You're going to just be a character, like just a caricature, right? And you're only going to see other people as caricatures. There's going to be no authenticity if you're not able to first and foremost be honest with yourself. You know, I remain so grateful to Scott because he has been such an anchor for me. And I think that that's something that everyone really needs. This is that push-pull thing. It's that, you know, we need both elements. We need to be connected to ourselves and we need connection to others, because you need to be rooted in reality. You need someone else who's not got an agenda to look at the situation and say, no, this is real. And you can root yourself in that reality so that you can find yourself and hold on to yourself. You know, like I said, there's no ego in self-love. There's love. It's not egotistical. You deserve love. You deserve to give love. You deserve to receive love. You literally deserve nothing less than that. But you're responsible for ending the cycle. So what it really boils down to is we have to quit looking for love outside of ourselves. This is really the ethos of everything I'm working on. It's the root of it is I am stopping looking for love and validation outside of my body. And I'm finding it purely just within myself. Because how could I possibly ask anyone to take responsibility for themselves if I am unwilling to take it on for myself first? You know, other people's issues, that's their issues. And I can't get in the way of someone else's life. And that's really what it boils down to, is I'm just focusing on myself. I'm loving myself. I'm making the changes that I need, because this is my life. That life is theirs. And I've realized, you know, when I really get to the root of my personal issues, I don't miss them, because I don't miss a person that exists. It's always been about me. It's always been about what I thought I wanted, who I thought they were. And so it's not that I miss a person, it's that I miss a mirage. I miss a dream of something I thought existed, but never really was there. Sometimes I look back on some of my relationships and I almost see them as like those, what is it? The like folie à deux, right? Like it's like this group delusion where we trick ourselves into thinking we're somewhere we're not. And then we wake up and we look back and we wonder how the fuck we got here. And so what I'm doing and what I encourage you to do is just, once you've had that wake-up call, do everything you can to stay awake. Ooh. So those are the notes that I had on it. I feel like I could talk so much more about every one of these topics, but or, you know, the facets of each topic. But I think I've said everything I need to say right now. That's where I'm at with love. I think it just comes down to love yourself first. And the love that you want and the love that you need is going to come past that. It's about patience, right? Take the time you need and it's going to come eventually. But enough about that. Let's shift gears a little bit. I've got a couple questions here from listeners that are a ton of fun. They're kind of correlated to some of the things we've talked about, but they can be a little bit more bouncy flouncy, a little less, you know, ranty banty, right? So here we go. First question. How do you tell real love from friendly love apart? And I feel like this is such a personal question for me because I'm somebody who, you know, I'm autistic. And so I don't really, what's the word? Like I say what I mean. This is something that always baffles me is finding out that people will like say one thing and knowingly mean something else. Like sometimes, you know, I was talking about it earlier in the episode, like sometimes I'll have these like subconscious intentions that I don't realize I have, but to find out that like some people like will knowingly say one thing meaning something else, just it sort of baffles me. And so I think that this is something that happens where like I'll just be friendly to people and they'll think that like I'm flirting, and it's like, oh no, you'll know if I'm flirting because I'll be doing it terribly, but like if I'm flirting, I'm trying to flirt. If I'm just talking, I'm talking. And I think that this is the root of this question, is like, how do you tell when someone is just like, you know, being friendly versus like has an actual interest? And I wish I had a better answer than like just ask, because I think this sort of like leaving stuff unspoken has this root in a type of culture that I really want to die and burn in hell, which is this like unspoken, read body language. You know, if she turns her feet this way, it means this. Or if he bites his lip, it means like, fuck all that, right? Like just ask, because it'll either, you know, go well and you'll have the answer you want, or you'll just finally have the clarity and you'll know, okay, they meant this. And so it's on you to just be brave and ask for clarity and not torture yourself in all these ambiguities, right? Of course, on the flip side, it's also on them to be someone who will be honest with you, right? And it's why, you know, earlier this year, I was talking about like, I'm no longer giving people more than one chance to just be directly honest. If I sense something is wrong, I'll ask, is something wrong? And if they say, no, everything's fine, then it is forever on them to communicate if there actually is a problem, and I'm not going to worry about it anymore. And I think that this is another example of that, where it's like, if you ask if something's going on and, you know, there is something, but they say no, that's no longer your problem. You've been given the information that you've been given and you need to act accordingly, right? I don't think it's on you to interpret someone else's emotions. I think it's, you know, if you are curious about how someone feels, ask them, right? Don't try to just like piece it together like some kind of weird Sherlock. Just, you know, ask. Next question. What memory helps you giggle or unknowingly smile on a tough day? And this is a funny one because I think my brain goes in two different directions with this. Like, I think in one hand, it's sort of like a context thing. Like, not so much that there's sort of like one repeating memory that I always go back to that will like come up if I'm feeling down, so much as like, if I'm out and about and, you know, something will pop up where I'll be like, oh yeah, remember the time this
funny thing happened, or, you know, I'll have texted with somebody and then suddenly like a memory of 10 years ago with them will pop up, or, you know, these kinds of things. So it's often more like kind of a context based thing for me. I think the other direction, though, is that I'm working really hard, really mindfully on doing this sort of internal reframing of feelings in my mind. So, you know, coming back to that idea of shame and all those things, is I'm trying to reframe should haves into at leasts in my mind. So thinking of like, you know, oh, I should have done that. It's like, well, at least I did this, you know? And so I think in my moments of like really deep frustration or anger, I've been doing this thing where I've sort of been making myself laugh and just sort of shaking my head, thinking about like the way these people are behaving, right? You know, because it's like, you know, we act so serious and we act like we're so confident and we've got everything figured out and we're just so cool and look at how great my life is, right? But like deep down, like we're fucking terrified and we know nothing about anything. And it's just, it's silly, right? Like we're all just so goddamn silly. So I think to myself, well, at least whatever, like, you know, at least they look happy, or at least I'm happy, or, you know, right? So yeah, it's not so much like a one memory thing so much as like a reframing of tough moments. Sidebar, that person who asked that question actually directed me in a play in university. And I will say that almost every single time that I speak with them, I flash back to working on that play. It was a Daniel McIver play, and one of, if not my favorite play, like an easy top three of my entire time at UVic. And I just always think of my first entrance into the play, and just the like wave of laughter that would kind of greet me, right? And I think it was their parents came to see it, and I remember being told beforehand that they were in the audience, and I stepped out and I, you know, and I heard what I thought was her mom laughing. And I don't know, there's something so comforting about a mom liking your performance. Not to get really dark, but I don't think my mom's ever seen me act. So I've only ever gotten it sort of like from the contact high of other people. So I definitely hold on to that memory. The next question is a really cute one. How are you feeling loved lately? And, you know, it's funny. I just spent 20 minutes talking about it in One Direction. You know, like I'm feeling loved by loving myself, by learning to stop looking for validation externally, and instead by, you know, setting my own markers for success and then celebrating myself regardless of if I hit them or not, because I always deserve celebrating, just like you always do. At the same time, too, what I am feeling from external love is the people that I'm really cultivating a friendship with and a connection with are just showing up in the most amazing ways that I just feel so deeply grateful for. You know, I made a new friend off TikTok. We went for a hike last week, like, you know, just these one-on-one hangouts. I have a friend who just moved back from New Zealand. We went thrift store shopping the other day and got ramen, and it was just like, it was so magic to just like, you know, spend an afternoon with someone who I just cherish, and getting to hear all their stories. And I love listening to people as much as I'm, you know, I love talking and I love babbling, but I love listening to people, and I love hearing about their thoughts and their feelings and their experiences. And so, you know, I think in some way I feel loved by people trusting me to tell their stories to, right? I think that's a deeply validating thing. And the people who are building those connections with me right now are some of the most invaluable people in the world right now. This is a cute one. What is the most romantic thing a platonic friend has done for you, or that you have done for a friend? You know, I have to admit, I haven't done tons of like quote unquote romantic things for friends. And that's something that I would like to do differently in the future. But I think the most romantic thing, this is a silly one, but there's two. It was both right when I was getting divorced. A friend of mine Basically, like the day he found out, he sent me a bunch of pizzas. He was like, he's like, you need to eat. I was in Saskatoon. He was in Vancouver, and he bought me. He Googled the best pizza in Saskatoon. He called them. He ordered it for me. Sent it to my apartment. And there's just something so deeply nurturing and beautiful about that. Like, that's such a deep, deep love language for me. And so I consider that very romantic. And then another one, my best friend, like he flew me out to Victoria to get me out of town while it was all going down, and, you know, paid for everything. And, you know, that feels pretty romantic, you know, paying for somebody else's trip. Like I think that, you know, I don't know how I'll ever repay that. I don't know if I ever will be able to, but I hold a very, very deep love in my heart for those acts. And those are the kinds of things I would love to be able to do for others going forward. But I do have to admit, I don't think I've done many romantic things. When I was a kid in French immersion, I remember one Valentine's Day, I think it was grade two, we had to go around to everyone's desk and write something nice on their, each of us had a big heart on our desk, and we all had to write nice messages to each other. And I went around writing, je t'aime, not realizing that that's not I like you, that's I love you. So I went around and I told 28-year-olds that I loved them. So that's pretty romantic, you know, a little fledgling Casanova there, right? Also, you know, early signs of my bisexuality, right? But, you know. And very last question, we're leaving out on a high note. Fuck, marry, kill, Brachiosaurus, Spinosaurus, Pterodactyl. And, you know, I wish I could say I spent a long time agonizing over this, but honestly, first of all, I cannot believe you didn't list my favorite dinosaur of all time, the Stegosaurus, but that's fine. I understand. I get it. So where I landed was I would fuck the Spinosaurus because, you know, I think we could probably get up to some things. I would kill the Pterodactyl because flying dinosaurs aren't actually dinosaurs. I believe they're called pterosaurs, and they're monsters. And I would marry the Brachiosaurus because it's a nice big Veggiosaurus. It would be like being married to just a giant cow, and you could ride him, and he would take you around. You could hug his big long neck, and he'd probably like curl around you at night, and it would just be really cute, and he'd be gentle and lovely, and I would love him forever. So there's my answer. How about you? Who would you fuck, marry, kill? Brachiosaurus, Spinosaurus, or Pterodactyl? Is it for another month. I hope you enjoyed this little guy episode. If you did, please be sure to leave a 5-star review anywhere you listened. It helps me out so much to get the word out on the show. Follow me on TikTok. Apparently people are liking some of the things I'm posting. You can check me out at FriendlessPod. Also be sure to follow Hey Sorry I Missed You on Instagram. It is my daily year-long novel in verse that I have been writing since the beginning of January. Having an absolute blast with it. It's only getting deeper, stronger. I'm loving what's coming out. The vast majority of it is already written, but I am allowing a little bit of space for some pockets of stuff to write as the year goes on. So a little bit of a mishmash. And I love it. I think you'll love it. So check it out. All the links for all those things are going to be in the show notes. While you're there, why not sign up for the Friendless Substack? You're going to get a weekly update filled with all kinds of goodies, a curated playlist for the month, recommendations of stuff to check out, including, you know, books, movies, music, podcasts, action figures, pens, nail polish, all kinds of fun stuff, all there for free, straight to your inbox. Sign up for that, as always, in the show notes. But that is it for me. So you know what? I'm just going to wrap this up here. I talked a little bit longer than I was expecting. I hope you enjoyed it, and I hope you will be back next week for a brand new interview. It's a ton of fun. I've been looking forward to posting this one for a while, and I hope you join me. But I'm not going to worry about that, because that is then, and this is now. So for now, I'll just say I love you, and I wish you well. Fun and safety, sweeties.